And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With you till 3 on this Monday, with plenty to get to as we kickstart another week. With plenty to recap from over the sports weekend. Coming up, as always, our winners and losers from the weekend in college football. Plus, the Gamecocks with an embarrassing performance on Saturday. They have to start to show something even in year one. And Clemson, no, they're just bad. Plus, the biggest concern for each title contender in college football, a big weekend for potential LSU front runners. We'll break down each game from week 7 of the NFL season. And oh, by the way, despite all the football going on, we got the Atlanta Braves heading to the World Series for the first time this century. As the World Series begins tomorrow night, and the Braves will be there. Got plenty to do over the next few hours, and you can always join the conversation as well. 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter, at Morrow Middays, on Facebook, at ESPN Charleston. Via email, studio at kirkmanbroadcasting.com or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on our show page, and there you can leave a comment for the show. You can find the latest versions of the show podcasted right there, or you can even take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go by simply streaming us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. With you till 3 on this Monday. Plenty to do between now and then. Joe's on the steel wheels. Joe, what's going on? How are you?
Oh, what's going on? A lot of stuff, so we need to get right to it.
You're not kidding. And we always begin our Mondays with the biggest. I come in, I tell you the biggest winners and losers from Saturday in college football beyond just the box score and the final score. I got a six-pack of each. It's how we always start the week. Break down the action that was in college football with our winners and losers.
Here's what I want you to look at. There are winners.
Yeah!
They are losers.
Well, I guess I'm a loser.
A loser.
And there are people who have not discovered how to win.
Number one winner, Lane Kiffin, for a couple of different reasons. Number one, I mean, they won the game. They beat LSU, and at one point, they're up by 24. It was a good win for Ole Miss. Still have only lost to Alabama. Number two, because of the team they played in LSU. Lane Kiffin keeps getting mentioned as the potential next head coach for LSU. Now, I don't know if he'd be interested in jumping to another team in the conference after just 2 years at Ole Miss. I don't know. Maybe he would be. Maybe he likes what he's building there. In fact, when the playoff expands to 12 teams, I don't know if it's even necessary. If Lane Kiffin is really building something at Ole Miss, if there was a 12-team playoff this year, they would be in it. So does he need to go to LSU to try to go win a national championship or make the playoff, or can he continue to build what he's already working on at Ole Miss and just stay put there and actually build something instead of jumping around and getting that reputation of, you know, being there only for a couple of years and then leaving for something better? We'll see. But going up against LSU with their administrators watching, Lane Kiffin beat them pretty convincingly. It wasn't as close as the final score would indicate. Offense had a pretty good game, and they beat LSU as his kind of, it could be like an audition for that job if he is interested. I imagine LSU would, or at least should, be interested in him. And then the third reason why Lane was the big winner on Saturday, it was a trifecta for him, is because of Arch Manning in the recruitment of this kid that is supposed to be the next generational talent at the quarterback position. Now, I expected Ole Miss to actually run it up a little bit more on LSU. Arch Manning was there, obviously being recruited by Ole Miss, and he was there because his uncle, Eli Manning, was having his jersey retired on Saturday. Interesting timing. It's like the Washington football team, after they had some bad publicity last week and announced, oh, actually, we're going to retire Sean Taylor's jersey this weekend. Why do you announce that the week of? For Ole Miss, I don't know how long this was actually planned, but intriguing that this season, while recruiting Arch Manning, they said, hey, let's retire Eli Manning's number. And we'll have a whole day for the Mannings, and it'll be real special, and Arch can come, and he can see what it's like, right, and see, go back and look at the tradition and history of his name, his family, at Ole Miss. Lane Kiffin showed up wearing an Eli Manning jersey to the game. Those are the things you have to do when you're recruiting a 16, 17-year-old. It's why Nick Saban went on the Manning cast for Monday Night Football earlier this season. Right, a Monday night NFL game, why is Saban taking time out of his night to go talk with the Mannings? Why? Because he would love Arch Manning to come to his program. So sure, he'll go talk and hang out with Arch's uncles. And it also looks kind of cool for Arch Manning. That was a free recruitment pitch, as was this Saturday for Lane Kiffin. Kirby Smart traveled to Arch's game Friday night. He was there for a reason. And this was the perfect move by Ole Miss to pull out all the stops. You go into your bag of tricks, hey, why don't we go back to his uncle who played here, retire his jersey, have a whole special day for the Manning family. Arch can come be part of it, see what potentially could be in his future, how much they love the Manning name around here, this and that. We'll make him feel real special. And then we'll also go out there and beat LSU in the process. That was a big day for Ole Miss, or specifically Lane Kiffin, for three reasons. Number one, he got the win. Number two, beat LSU and looked good doing it if he's actually interested in that job. And number three, if he's not interested, he wants to stay at Ole Miss. Well, Saturday probably went a long way in the recruitment of Arch Manning. I was surprised, though, as I said, that they didn't run it up more. They settled in the second half. That punt of the football took it easy on LSU. I figured for both Arch's sake and LSU's sake, for Lane Kiffin, if he was really interested, man, he'd run it up and really show him what he's capable of doing. Now, Matt Corral was a little banged up, so they took it easy with him, but they did also have a pass to the quarterback, right, to show Arch Manning, maybe, hey, here's a couple of fun things we can do around here, too. Look at this offense that you could be part of. Lane Kiffin, the biggest winner of the weekend. Number two, Wake Forest. They're now the number 13 team in the country. They went to Army and scored 70 points, but the most impressive part was that they scored those 70 points while only having the football for 17 minutes. On average, that's scoring a touchdown every 102 seconds, a minute 42 for every scoring drive as you score 10 touchdowns. They went right down the field on Army. Army played perfect, right, in terms of their game plan. They played keep away. They controlled the football, clearly won time of possession by more than two-thirds. They scored 56 points themselves, and they still lost by double digits. That was a good win for Wake Forest. I know it's only Army, but those are tough teams. Ask Cincinnati. Right, two ranked teams struggled with those option attacks on Saturday. And Sam Hartman was fantastic. He threw, what was it, five touchdowns and had six incompletions, four touchdowns, five incompletions, something along those lines. He had as many touchdowns as incompletions, had over 400 yards. He's setting all sorts of records. Wake Forest is the number 13 team in the country. Suddenly he needs to be mentioned as a Heisman candidate. It's the best start for Wake Forest in decades as they're undefeated. The number three winner, also a quarterback in the ACC, that's Kenny Pickett, for what you saw him do against Clemson. Go for over 300 yards and get a nice win at home against the Tigers. Pickett now this year has 23 touchdowns, one interception. He has been excellent. It's a top five offense. Statistically, he's been a top five quarterback. And we always talk about these Heisman moments. That's overblown. I think it's silly. But I don't know if this would count as a Heisman moment. It's a good win, though, for Kenny Pickett at home to beat Clemson by double digits. Yeah, he got help with a little pick six on defense, and DJ struggled. More on that coming up. But Pickett has been excellent this year. Just the one interception, 23 turnovers, fantastic ratio, a quarterback rating in the top five in the country, and now also beat Clemson. No, not the same Clemson, but still, you beat him at home like that against a good defense. That was a good win for Pickett, and he's been playing really well this year. Now he's the quarterback of the number 17 team in the country, should be in the Heisman conversation, and if it wasn't for that loss against Western Michigan last month for Pittsburgh, we'd be talking about them as potentially a top 12, 10 team right now in the country. The number four winner, Miami, or I guess more specifically, Manny Diaz. Miami upset NC State on Saturday. It was their first conference win of the year, but more importantly for Manny Diaz, it may have saved his job for a little bit longer. There were reports going into that game that if Miami loses this game, that may be it for Manny already in less than 3 years. Maybe they wouldn't pull the plug this week, but they would at the end of the season. kind of like Will Muschamp, right? Like, we knew it was coming. And then the Post and Courier, I think it was, or the state newspaper, somebody did a really good job this offseason. They got all the emails, and you could see the conversations were starting weeks in advance before they actually fired Will Muschamp. Because people make those decisions before they let it be known, right? If you're going to be fired based off of your performance, not something you do that causes a sudden firing, but your bosses know in advance, and they're probably planning for that moment or maybe giving you a last chance or just waiting for the right time, but they don't just wake up one day and say, ah, that's it, we got to move on from this guy. There may be something that breaks the back, right, the final straw, but they have that thought process along the way. Or when you get divorced, sure, you come home and, you know, the mailman's in bed with your wife, okay, that may change your mind. You may have woken up in a happy marriage and gone to bed getting a divorce. But if you wake up and you know, you don't just wake up one day and say, ah, we're growing apart, that's it. You've had those thoughts along the way. You've been thinking about it. You've been working towards that moment. There's a line of events that got you to that point. My point in all this being, for Manny Diaz, maybe to, if they lost on Saturday, maybe he wouldn't have got canned yesterday. But it could have been that straw that broke the back that they knew, okay, that's it. This isn't working out. 16-14, just his third win against a ranked team but Miami on Saturday, upsetting NC State and saving his job for the time being. But Miami has been a real disappointment. Year three of Manny Diaz, they haven't gotten the job done, and there is a lot of scuttlebutt that going into that game, if they don't win this game, that's probably it for Manny. At least for the time being, looks like maybe he has saved his job. The number five winner of the college football weekend, Michigan football fans. Michigan took care of Northwestern, Michigan State was on their bye, and now Saturday we can get ready for the first top 10 matchup in this rivalry history since 1964. Michigan is number six in the country, Michigan State number eight, both teams undefeated, should be a heck of a game on Saturday. By the way, don't overlook Ohio State either when talking about the Big Ten. They have gotten it going. C.J. Stroud has been excellent. They have scored over 50 points in four straight games, and Ohio State has outscored their opponents by almost 200 points in those four games. If Michigan wins Saturday against Michigan State, what a matchup we will be setting up for Michigan and Ohio State in a few weeks. And the number six winner, the last big winner of the weekend, is Oregon. The number seven team in the country and the number eight team in the country both lost. And Oregon went on the road and beat UCLA as an underdog. Good win for them. And now Oregon's the number seven team in the country. And by the way, four teams in front of them still have to play one another. So there'll be some more losses ahead of Oregon in the rankings. Plus, Ohio State's ahead of them for some reason, even though they beat Ohio State. Right, so that doesn't make much sense, but they're right now behind Ohio State. So there's a chance for Oregon to climb towards that top four and keep the Pac-12 alive. Problem is, people don't really buy into that. They have 80-1 odds right now in Vegas, which is far, you know, down the list. A lot of teams ahead of them. In fact, I believe those are the same odds as even like a Pittsburgh in terms of, I think that's just making the playoff. And ESPN's FPI gives them a 3% chance of making the playoff this year, 11th best odds. So Oregon and the Pac-12, they're still alive, but not by much. People still doubt them. Now on to the six losers. Number one, Cincinnati. Or I guess really, top five teams that struggled this weekend. Cincinnati was one of them. Sure, they beat Navy, but only by a touchdown. And Cincinnati is in a position right now that I think they need to run it up. They don't not only have to win, but have to win in big ways. Because they will never get the benefit of the doubt. Things are already stacked against them. Everybody doubts them. You don't want to believe in them. Oh, they're not that good. And then now you have something to point to. Oh, they only beat Navy by 7 points. It's hard to blow out Navy and Army because they shorten the game and, you know, you get fewer possessions and, you know, with their option attack. A win is a win as long as you win, but Cincinnati needs to win in impressive ways so that people can't doubt them. They'll go undefeated and everyone will point, well, they only beat this team by 7 and they only beat this team by 10. And they're playing in this weak conference, and they're not blowing teams out. They have been this year. But if you only beat Navy by 7, Navy is not good this year. They have just one win. That was a bad win for Cincinnati if there was such a thing. That's the type of game you got to go in there and blow them out like everybody else and continue to build that positive momentum. Not give the doubters something to point to. The other team in that category, Oklahoma. Now they're 8-0 for the first time since 2004, but they were getting shut out. Down by 10 in the second half against Kansas, a team that has lost 19 straight games against FBS programs. And because of that, Oklahoma dropped to number 4 behind Alabama, who actually has a loss. The Sooners have the smallest margin of victory of any undefeated Power 5 team. Are they average to win by single digits each week? And they shouldn't have struggled so much with Kansas. By the way, Kansas just opened their gates. They were letting fans in for free on Saturday. That's how bad of a program that is and how big of a game it was against number 4 Oklahoma. They were thinking, let's just pack this place. They were letting fans in for free. How often do you go to a game? You go to like a high school game and they're charging you, right? You go to high school football on Friday night, you got to pay like $10 to get into a high school football game. Kansas, Oklahoma, they said, nope, everybody just come in for free. We need people to fill up the stadium. That's how bad that program is. And Oklahoma was down double digits in the second half. That, too, was an ugly win. The number 2 big loser, staying in the Big 12, Oklahoma State. They lost to Iowa State. Now, Oklahoma State was an underdog. They kept it closer than even Vegas thought. But Oklahoma State, number 8 team in the country. Iowa State, 2 losses, unranked. You can't lose that game if you're Oklahoma State. Now, they can beat Oklahoma at the end of the year. Both teams have 1 loss. Probably would be a rematch in the conference championship. You beat them there. You win the conference with 1 loss. You hope they put you in the playoff. Their season's not done with, but it wasn't a good loss for them. That wasn't a good look, much like Iowa the week before. You want people to buy into you and believe in you. You can't lose to an unranked team. And for Oklahoma State, they had a 4th-and-2 play, came up inches short on the final drive, going for at least the tie, if not the win, in the 2-minute drill, and that's how they lost. It's an offense that hasn't been great this year. They lost a couple of their receivers before the start of the season, and it's an offense that is very dependent on a couple of big plays. They'll get 3 or 4 big plays, otherwise they don't do much offensively. They've been led by their defense, and Saturday, Iowa State played well enough to get enough points to beat them. It's a bad loss for Oklahoma State. It was a bad indication that they were a touchdown underdog to Iowa State to begin with. Number 3 on the list of losers, Penn State, for losing to Illinois. And Penn State had 227 yards of offense in that game, despite going to 9 overtimes. Now, you know, again, once you get to the 3rd overtime and you only have 2-point plays where you can only get a couple of yards, but they had about 200 yards of offense in regulation. Terrible. And now you go from Penn State talking about them as a potential playoff team to now by year's end, they could have a handful of losses. If you're James Franklin, maybe now you start to turn your attention to USC or LSU, as seemingly their championship dreams are dashed this year. But that's a bad loss to Illinois. I would also say we're all losers if you sat around and watched that game. I told you a couple of weeks ago the first time it was used, but I hate this new rule of the 2-point conversion shootout. It's silly. It's ridiculous. It's a lousy way to decide a winner. I love the old school college football overtime, and the idea of this was to shorten the games. Well, it led to the longest game in college football history. And I know there's fewer plays. It's 1 play per side each overtime, but it still went to 9 overtimes, 9 sessions before we got a winner. I don't know if that would be the case if they had to start from the 25 and play actual football. I thought that was a lousy way to decide a winner, and I hate that new rule. And also a loser, even in the win, Bert Bielema. After he ripped his players last week and blaming the prior coaching staff and the players that were left behind, well, they just went out there and beat a top 10 team. So I hope Bielema, I did not see his post-game press conference. Maybe you did. Did he get up to the podium and thank Lovie Smith for the players he left behind that helped him to beat Penn State on Saturday, or was he still blaming them? Maybe he put a chip on the shoulder of his players this week, and that's why they went out there and played that well against Penn State. Maybe he told you that was his plan all along. It was just a motivational tactic. But I hate that move when coaches do that. And so, well, we were left with no talent. Blame the previous coach. That's why we're not winning games. That's fine. Say that if you want. But when you win, you better give credit to that previous coach and those players as well. They're not just your guys in the good times and not in the bad times. Right, when you're winning, you can't say, well, you know, we got a great group of players. And when you're losing, well, I mean, the previous coach just didn't do a good job. No, it's your program. You're the coach. Coach them up. They're your players. Bielema threw his guys under the bus. And then a few days later, they went out there and they upset Penn State. I hope he thanked Lovie Smith afterwards for the players that he left behind that allowed him to win that game. Bielema in the win, once again, is a big loser, like most of his coaching career. Number 4, fans of offense in this state. On the list of losers, if you like offense and you live in South Carolina, I feel for you. Because South Carolina and Clemson offensively are terrible. And even if you watched the NFL yesterday, how about the Carolina Panthers? That set football back decades. Neither USC, South Carolina that is, or Clemson have scored over 21 points against an FBS team this year. Embarrassing. And let's focus on Clemson here for a moment because that was the bigger loss. It's their worst start to a season since 2010. First double-digit loss in the regular season in 8 seasons. DJ got benched during the game, and rightfully so. Their offense is atrocious. They have the second highest drop rate in the country, only ahead of Old Dominion. And now you look at their season. They lost to NC State. They now lost to Pittsburgh. They're probably going to lose to Wake Forest at this rate. What a season for Clemson. Certainly not as expected. I put Clemson / fans of offense in general in this state number 4 on that list. If you like to watch touchdowns from teams that play in South Carolina, I guess you just have to tune into Coastal Carolina. They're the only ones that can actually move the football. Number five on the list of losers, SEC East. Georgia, Kentucky, Florida were all on bye. And the rest of that division, they got outscored 141-44. The west of the SEC is much better. The east is way too top-heavy. All you have is Georgia and Kentucky, and that's it. And Kentucky, I still have some questions about in terms of really competing at the top of that conference. But the bottom of the east is horrendously bad. Missouri, South Carolina, Vanderbilt, you have the three worst teams in the SEC in that division. The SEC West, much better. The SEC East had their big players on bye this week, and the rest of their teams got beat by 100 points. Embarrassing. And the last loser of the weekend, number six on my list, Arizona. You had a two-score lead in the fourth quarter at home against Washington, and you blew it. Final four possessions for Arizona in that game, interception, three and out, interception. And they blew a 9-point lead, two-score lead at home in the fourth quarter against Washington. Arizona has now lost 19 straight games. It's been 2 years since they've won. And an honorable mention goes to Steve Adazio on the list of losers for his clock management. Did you see that the other night with Colorado State? Horrendous. Had a chance to make the winning field goal with 11 seconds left, and he didn't know what he was doing. Instead of spiking the football, with the clock stopped for a first down, 11 seconds left, they tried to rush the field goal unit on the field, missed the kick, ended up losing, and Adazio afterwards, of course, like all good coaches, threw his guys under the bus and said he didn't call for that. They just assumed that the play was to rush the field goal unit out there, and the players themselves ran out there without any coach telling them to. The coaches were saying to spike it, and it was the players' fault for running on the field to try to kick a field goal. Good leaders don't throw players under the bus. Good leaders say we when you win and I when you lose. Right, Adazio, terrible clock management, and then blaming the players afterwards, pretty weak. And those are your winners and losers from college football on Saturday. When we come back, we'll zero in on the Gamecocks and Clemson. The Gamecocks need to show something, even in year one. And Clemson, they're just a bad team. We'll get to that next. It's the Morrow Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
When the sun beats down and burns the tar up on the roof, and your shoes get so hot you wish your tired feet were fireproof, under the boardwalk, down by the sea, on a blanket with my baby.
Coming up, tough weekend for college football around these parts. The Gamecocks, even in year one, need to show something. We'll get to that here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. The Citadel lost. The Citadel was favored by double digits against Western Carolina and lost. They were down 21 at the half. Western Carolina is now 2-21, I think it is, in their last 23 games. And the two wins are against the Citadel. Western Carolina was 0-6 last year, beat the Bulldogs. 0-6 this year, beat the Bulldogs. That was brutal. Coastal Carolina lost. They had their, 19-game regular season winning streak snapped. That's going back to Wednesday. And then on Saturday, of course, you had Clemson lose to Pittsburgh. We'll get to that coming up. And the Gamecocks got completely embarrassed against Texas A&M. I mean, that was a joke. I hope you didn't watch much of that game. They hung in there for about half a quarter, and then it just became disgraceful.
But that was kind of expected.
Yeah, not to that extent, though. I mean, Texas A&M was favored by 19.5. So they should have won by about three touchdowns. But the fact that the Gamecocks had, 6 yards of offense in the second half? I mean, are you kidding me? You couldn't move the football whatsoever? They were something like 0 of 7 on third downs? I got to bring up the box score. Horrendous. Texas A&M had over 300 more yards. Totally blew them out. That was men amongst boys. Tough to watch. Now, there's a grace period anytime you start a new job, not just for a coach, but you or I as well. In fact, I was curious. I was wondering, what is the grace period? Just in an everyday office. I looked it up. They said, 90 days. You get about 90 days for your new job before, and then before your coworkers or your boss can really expect you, you better be hitting the ground running at that point. But in those first 90 days, a little bit of a grace period. It's not that you can slack off or you could do a bad job. They want you to come in. If they hired you, they want you to come in and do a good job right away, but they understand you're still learning the ropes. You're still getting comfortable. You're learning the landscape. you're getting to know the different clients or area or different companies, whatever it is that you do, they give you 90 days. 3 months in, if you're still struggling, maybe you're just not the right person for the job. All right, now 90 days isn't enough for a college football coach. You have to wait until about year three, really. You got to give him 3 years. Manny Diaz, this is year three. He may not last much longer. We've seen enough at this point. Okay, you know what? He's not the right guy for the job. You cannot make that determination after 7 games. You got to give at least, you know, about 2.5 seasons. But with that said, you got to see something along the way. Even in that grace period, you hire a new employee, and they struggle here and there over the first 90 days. They're getting to know, you know, maybe the programming, whatever you software you use, whatever the job is. Or they're auto salesmen, you know, they're working at a sales, they're selling cars for you, but they worked at a different dealer, and now they're trying to learn a new type of car. They used to work with Volvo, now they're selling BMWs for you. They're still figuring out some of the intricacies of the cars. But once you get to 90 days, all right, then it's like, okay, you got to be good to go. And in those first 90 days, you got to show me something. Sure, you struggle in this area, but I could see the potential. You're really good over here. And that's the problem. Right? That we need to see some growth. I haven't seen it. Have you seen any growth from the Gamecocks this year? I've seen them go in the opposite direction, to the point where they barely beat Vanderbilt. They get blown out by Texas A&M, not even competitive. That's not a game you should win. But can you hang in there a little bit? Can you move the football slightly? Can you get a couple of first downs in the first 3 quarters before the game gets completely out of hand? Can you not completely embarrass yourself? Can you look like you belong in the SEC? I saw people comparing the Gamecocks over the weekend to just Vanderbilt with more money invested and more care in their football program. Right? Steve Spurrier is like James Franklin. James Franklin's the only coach to win at Vanderbilt. And you look back at that and like, wow, how did he pull that off? And you look back like Steve Spurrier, how did he do that? How did he have that much success there? Look, I'm not going to – we shouldn't get too crazy 7 games into Shane Beamer. But you got to see something. You have to see some sort of growth, something moving in the right direction. I know he took over a bad situation from Will Muschamp. But show me some growth. Show me that this team is in a better spot now than they were at the end of last season. Because remember, it was last year when they got blown out by Texas A&M that sealed the fate of Will Muschamp. That was it for him. It was another embarrassing performance. They were nothing close, and they said, okay, we cannot do this anymore. And they moved on from Muschamp after that game. Now, again, you're not going to do the same thing 7 games into Beamer's tenure. But compare last year after that Texas A&M game to today after Texas A&M. And maybe it's too short of a turnaround because of recruiting and all this, right? You got to give a guy a little more time. But show me, where has the growth been? That would be the concern. Now, I'm not telling you, fire Shane Beamer. I'm not telling you he's not the right guy for the job. That's still to be determined. But what I am saying is, in the meantime, while we wait until that point where we can make a determination, in the meantime, I think it is somewhat concerning that I'm just not seeing the growth there. It's a good time for a buy right now for South Carolina to try to regroup. And I said this about Luke Doty, and now I'll say it about either Gauthier or Brown, anybody else. No more Zeb Nolan. I thought he gave you the best chance to win. I'm not so sure anymore, but I don't need to see any more of him. I know you're trying to win games. You want to compete. Well, you couldn't compete with him out there on Saturday. At this point, I don't know if anybody in that quarterback room is the quarterback of the future, but you got to see something and find out. And you don't want to throw anybody to the wolves if they're not ready yet. But you're not gaining anything by playing Zeb. All right, that's no growth for the program. That's nothing for the future of the program. He's not going to be around after a few more games. Whether you win a 6th game or a 5th game this year doesn't really mean a whole lot. I want to see something for the future. Develop some of these younger guys. Throw them out there. See what they're capable of. Enough, Zeb. He was overwhelmed against Texas A&M. Doesn't get much help around him. It's a bad offense. Not a lot of great personnel right now. They can't run the football, which was their calling card. What's the one thing you'd hang your hat on? At least last year when they were bad, they had the best rushing attack. They had a great rushing attack, even without Marshawn Lloyd. You thought, okay, well, at least we could do this. And when Shane Beamer took over, right, there were a lot of growing pains, but, hey, we'll be able to run the football. They haven't been able to do that this year. They're running it at 3.5 yards a carry. Couldn't run it the other night against Texas A&M. Their one strength is no longer a strength. The defense looked pretty good early in the season. Not so much when they actually go up against good personnel. What's the thing you can hang your hat on? What's the strength? Where's the growth been? That's the concern. I'm not telling you, you got to go out there and win 8 games this year, but can you show us that you're moving in the right direction? Can you show us that eventually you're on your way up and eventually you'll get to that point where you want to be by year three, but you're already, it's like, you're on an amusement park ride on a roller coaster and you're going up, right, going up, and you're not all the way at the top yet. You're not all the way where you're going to get reach the very top and have that drop down, but you at least are getting there. You can feel the growth. You can see it. You look around. Oh, yeah, we are climbing, right, in this roller coaster. That's what I want to see. and I didn't expect them to win or even – look, I took Texas A&M to cover the 20 points, but I did not see that coming on Saturday. That was embarrassing. How big of a gap there was. It was man amongst boys. And they're not supposed to be as good as Texas A&M, but can you at least, you know, look like you belong on the same field as another team in your conference? That's what's concerning. Shane Beamer, let's hear from Shane Beamer in the postgame after that loss Saturday for South Carolina against Texas A&M, where I got blown out, couldn't do anything offensively. It was ugly. Like I said, good time for a bye week to try to regroup now. Here was Shane Beamer talking after the game.
Game plan-wise, I thought it was good going into it. I mean, I thought we had a great plan, and it obviously didn't go quite like we thought. So, I mean, when you perform like we did in the first half, offensively, defensively, and special teams, we got to look at the plan at everything, you know. When you have the defense out there for, you know, 40 plays in the first half, they were 4 of 6 on third down. Texas A&M was in the first half. We got to get our butts off the field ourselves on defense. And, you know, offensively, when you're 0 for 6 and you only run 21 plays, you're obviously the plan and coaching and execution wasn't very good, and it's got to be better.
That was Shane Beamer after the game on Saturday. I made the case on Friday, right? You look at the other coordinators, other guys running this offense that have left and gone elsewhere and have had success before or after. Maybe it's more about the personnel, and I do think the personnel plays a large part for South Carolina right now and their struggles offensively, but also a tough message to send, right, if you continue to go status quo. And I know it's only year one. You don't want to make any radical changes, but I think it's clear Satterfield's not the guy for the offense. We don't know about Shane Beamer, but I think when you watch this offense or the offensive coordinator, it's not dynamic enough. You may have to make a change there. 185 yards is what they ended up with by the end of the game. Fewer than, over 300 yards fewer. 3 of 13 on third downs. Just horrendous. And most of that damage was done in the fourth quarter when they scored their 2 touchdowns. Otherwise, they had something like 11 yards going into the fourth quarter. Like 2 first downs. Awful. 843-721-9500 to join the conversation. Let's go to the phone. Somerville George is with us. Somerville George, what's going on? How are you?
Hey, Luke, great show. I appreciate you mentioning my old buddy that destroyed the Razorbacks, Mr. Volima. He definitely gets the loser of the week, my vote. I think you've forgotten about the biggest crybaby of all time, which was Lou Holtz when he went to Carolina. And after 2 years of only winning one game, he blamed the entire university. So they had a toxic culture and was too complacent with losing, and they needed to change the fight song to Notre Dame, put golden domes on the building, and have a touchdown Jesus you could see from the end zone. But none of his ideas actually worked. So.
Yeah, and I always hate the excuse making from these coaches. You know what you're getting yourself into when you take these jobs, and you know the players and the personnel left behind, and then when things don't start to work out, suddenly now those are the issues. When you took the job, you had nothing but good things to say at the press conference. So I always hate when coaches revert to that, the excuse making of blaming everybody else, when they're now the leaders of the program.
Yeah, it's funny, though. But it does correlate to some of the best coaches are champion poor mouths. You know, they'll never give anybody any bulletin board material.
Yeah, certainly. And maybe it's part of being a good coach is even just having the ego and that competitive nature. And Urban Meyer's another one like that. A lot of coaches maybe aren't the best guys or the best at the podium, but they know how to win football games. So we'll see. He got a big win. Or Illinois got a big win on Saturday. I just hated his comments last week about his football team.
Yeah, same here. Good talking to you, though.
Hey, likewise. Appreciate it, Somerville George. We'll get to Clemson coming up with their poor performance on Saturday. You can always join the conversation as well, 843-721-9500. We'll come back and get to Clemson. Look, maybe Clemson, maybe they're just a bad team. That's where we are right now. DJ certainly isn't the answer, and they're reminiscent of another top program about a decade ago. We'll get to all that coming up. Plus, of course, the Braves as well. We'll have some positive thoughts on a Monday with the Braves going to the World Series and a whole lot more to do throughout the afternoon. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Sometimes when this place gets kind of empty, sound of their breath fades with the light. I think about the loveless fascination under the Milky Way tonight.
Coming up, Clemson. Just a bad team right now. It's the Mar Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. The Mar Midday Show is brought to you by Baker Roofing. They have been in business for over 100 years. They're one of the largest, most recognized roofing contractors in the U.S., and they provide residential and commercial roofing. In 1915, Baker Roofing Company was founded on the promise of always good work. So give our friend Matt Johnson, general manager of Baker Roofing Charleston, a call, or head on over to bakerroofing.com for more information. Check out their incredible history and see all the different roofing types that are available online at bakerroofing.com. Over 100 years of always good work, Baker Roofing, bringing you the Morrow Midday Show each and every day. We'll get to Clemson. They remind me of another top program from about 10, 15 years ago in college football. Get to that coming up. But you can always join the conversation, 843-721-9500, to give us a call. Let's first go to the phones because Super Dave is with us. Dave, what's going on? How are you?
I was just laughing at the fact of how bad Texas A&M rode old Carolina. No wonder they need a weekend off. They need to get a Cassandra break.
I thought you were a Gamecock fan, though.
Yeah, I was, but let's face facts. They never win against Texas A&M. They go fight it even harder when they go Florida. They never beat the Gators too much, you know?
Well, they
the
now have
two. The only game I see really they can win this season is yep. Clemson.
Really?
Maybe.
You give them the best chance to beat Clemson the rest of the way.
Yeah, because they could beat Pittsburgh. You know, they lost. So they're probably got Carolina's best shot is to win the Palmetto Bowl.
What
this season?
What like a percentage chance would you give them? What percentage chance would you give them of actually winning that game? Do you think it's a 50-50?
50-50, yeah. 50-50
okay.
Right now.
All right. So
you
we're
know?
Looking at a coin flip. That's pretty good. But the rest of their
you know,
games.
I'd give a 50-50 shot.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. But they won't beat Florida or Auburn or Missouri.
Not Missouri. Missouri lost their last game, but their quarterback's pretty good. I see Missouri beat Carolina because Carolina don't beat them either too much. Who's the other team you said?
Florida and Auburn.
Auburn's tough. That might be a coin flip, too.
Oh.
That could be a coin flip. Is that a road game?
That's at home.
They could win. That could be winnable.
Oh,
all
right.
Whole field.
So maybe they end the season with a couple of wins. Auburn and Clemson are the last two games. You think maybe they could win those two?
What about Mizzou?
Would they be bowl eligible?
Yeah, if they win those two games.
Yeah, if they even lose to Auburn, it's possible.
So now you're coming around on the Gamecocks. You were talking about how embarrassing that was Saturday, but now look at this. You got them beating
Auburn
and Clemson.
Record. I have to do research on how Auburn's doing.
Oh, okay.
You know, who they beat and all, but right now it's still a coin flip, you know. They can still win, you know.
Sure.
It's a home game.
Yes.
So anything's possible there.
Okay.
But they lost bad at Texas A&M. I just hope that don't crush them.
Yeah, that was embarrassing.
Know?
Yeah. They have at least they got a week off now to get ready for Florida. What about look into that crystal ball of yours, Super Dave. What about the Braves in the World Series? The World Series begins tomorrow. Are we going to be celebrating a Braves World Series championship in the next 2 weeks?
Yeah, it's possible. The Astros could come back in the middle of that. How many games do they have? Seven?
Yeah, best of seven.
Seven?
Yeah, best of seven. Yep.
So you might see the Braves hot, or then you could see them get cold by the middle of it.
Uh-huh.
You know?
So they're going to start fast.
See that.
And then the Astros are going to come back, and then who ends up winning the series?
That's right. It's happened before.
Well, another who's going to end up winning?
Caught them by surprise there, Luke. Is the weather, too. The weather is getting cooler on these players. They used to play it in that real hot weather, you know?
Yeah.
So it's getting real cool now. This Saturday is going to be in the 60s.
Oh, my goodness. The 60s?
For a high.
Yeah.
So
oh, geez.
That might be a surprise, you know?
Yeah.
You might want to wear the big boy pants, Vote Bobby, that morning.
That's right.
You know?
We're going to get the Braves on the phones, and we're going to tell them, make sure to pack your big boy pants for the World Series if you want to stand a chance. We'll see. Now they begin the series in Houston, and that's indoors, so we'll see what happens starting tomorrow night in the World Series. I'm always reminded this time of year. I've told this story many times, in fact, probably every year. But today I'm reminded of this day now 35 years ago. The Red Sox, who of course had their season come to an end against the Astros, were on their way to breaking the curse at the time in 1986 against the Mets. And I tell this story every year, but my father was celebrating his birthday, about to have his first child. The Red Sox are about to win the World Series. And then the whole Mookie Wilson, Bill Buckner play unfolds, and the Red Sox blow Game 6. And then my parents give birth to my oldest brother, whose birthday is today, and they named him Jesse, and then had to watch, probably still from the hospital, Jesse Orozco celebrating on the mound for the Mets when they got the final out, and the Red Sox blew that series. So it went from pure bliss. Well, I mean, still in the end, I'm sure they were just satisfied they had a healthy boy instead of the Red Sox blowing the World Series. I think at that point, priorities, right? Well, the Red Sox blew the World Series. That sucked. But at least we have our first child, and he's good, and he's healthy and everything. And it seemed like a bad omen at the time. He was named Jesse. There's Jesse Orozco celebrating the Red Sox' latest choke. But fast forward 18 years, and they broke the curse, and things have been pretty good since. But today is the anniversary of that moment 35 years ago with Buckner and the Red Sox and the Mets as we get ready for this World Series, which is much later. That World Series was ending about now. This World Series is just going to be beginning. Braves-Astros, we'll get into the Braves coming up a little bit later on. We'll also get to Clemson and a whole lot more. And one college football coach, I have a love-hate relationship with his candy selections. We agree in one area, disagree in another. We'll get to that coming up. We got a lot to do, recapping from the football weekend. It's the Mara Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Mara Midday Show.
It's the Mara Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Tough weekend for football fans in these parts. Rainy days and Mondays today with some losses over the weekend. The Gamecocks getting blown out. Clemson losing to Pittsburgh. Throwing the Citadel as well. That was a bad loss to Western Carolina. The Carolina Panthers looked horrendous yesterday. We'll get to that coming up a little bit later on. We'll get to Clemson coming up. The one positive, of course, if you also, you know, if you have a Venn diagram and your teams overlap, you're a Clemson and or Gamecock fan and or Citadel fan and or Panther fan, but also a Braves fan, that's the one positive. We'll get to Clemson, the Braves, coming up next hour. We'll do our Week 7 NFL breakdown in the 2 o'clock hour later on this afternoon. But before we go here at the top of the hour, Mike Leach and Mississippi State got a big win on Saturday, blowing out Vanderbilt. Now, when you play Vanderbilt, you can, it's almost like an exhibition game. It's like a scrimmage. You can worry about other things. So here is Mike Leach after the game. His team just blew out Vanderbilt, but the more important topic was his favorite type of candy as we get ready for Halloween. I really agree with one thing Leach says. I disagree with the entire start of this conversation, however. Here is Leach on the field Saturday after their win talking about candy.
We talked about on the broadcast how you hate candy corn. What's your favorite Halloween
candy
game?
Corn. I mean, I completely hate candy corn. When I was a kid, well, gummy bears, let's see. Gummy bears for sure.
Sour or regular?
The Haribo. It's got to be the Haribo ones. And then the other thing I like is when they used to have the sprees in a box. Outstanding. You have to go to the dollar store to find it, but I do. And then the latest, you know, there's still candy innovation, although a while back I found that Europe had better candy than we did overall because they have gummy everything. And then, you know, they have those Nerds clusters, which is new.
The gummy.
Yeah, which is good. the Nerds clusters is good. And then if you go chocolate, probably Almond Joy.
Love it. Hopefully you'll get some of that next week.
Yeah, we'll see.
That was Mike Leach after the win. So much to unpack here. Number one, his favorite chocolate candy in the end, Almond Joy. And I agree. I have Almond Joys have always been my favorite. A very underrated candy. I don't think most people would say Almond Joy. Almond Joy and Mounds for me. And over the years, I got to be honest, I've become a little bit more of maybe a Mounds guy than an Almond Joy. But anything coconut. Now, Mike Leach is 60 years old. I do feel like Almond Joy is an older candy. Right, like older people like an Almond Joy. I don't know if a lot of kids are going trick-or-treating hoping they get Almond Joys. I guess I was the outlier, but I've always been referred to as an old soul, so I guess that goes right along with my favorite chocolate candy. Joe, are you an Almond Joy guy?
Yeah, they're pretty good.
Yeah, love a good Almond Joy. All right, but Mike Leach, where we disagree, he does not like candy corn. I am a candy corn person. You can only have so many. Then they get you know, they start taking taste of nasty. You got to take a little bit of a break. I don't remember, because we talk about this every year, are you a candy corn guy, Joe?
No, I am not. Oh. That's a good way to get your house egged.
Well, yes, I never wanted candy corn on Halloween. But if you got candy corn just around the house, you know, I'll take a bowl of candy corn while I'm watching TV and dive into some of those. Mike Leach, a big gummy guy. Gummy bears, that Nerds cluster. He was talking all sorts of gummies. Gummy bears, I enjoy. I'll get them at, like, the movie theater. I'll throw them on my frozen yogurt. But there's just something weird about the texture. I feel like I'm eating like silicone or something, right? Like when you eat a gummy bear, they're good. It just feels weird when you eat them. But Leach, a big gummy guy. I agree. The Haribo gummies, I don't know if that's how you actually pronounce it, but I've always
Haribo.
Said it the same way.
Haribo.
All right. Well, me and Mike Leach say it similar. I do agree. Those are the best ones. Are you a gummy guy? Do you like different gummies?
Yeah, gummy candies are good.
You spent time in other countries.
Right.
He said Europe has great candy. Have you noticed? Does Europe have better candy than our country?
To be honest with you, I don't recall eating a lot of candy in Europe.
Yeah. And Mike Leach loves those gummies. Apparently, they have better gummies in Europe. We can agree, though, Mike Leach and I, that Almond Joys are fantastic.
No, the sodas do taste different over there.
Better or worse?
Better, for the most part.
Oh! How about that? Hour 2 coming up next. We'll get to Clemson, the Braves, maybe more candy as well.